Hello, beautiful people, and welcome back to another episode of Two Girls, One Doc.
One Doc.
It's your girl, BD.
It's Foreign's the fiance.
And we are back, and it is late, and I'm sick, so
oh, no.
I feel like the energy is going to be... You know, every October I get a cold.
I didn't know that.
Every October since 2016, I get a cold. And, like, the cold isn't really in full form right now, but, like, I feel like she's pending.
Wow, you need to figure out what happened.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Really some spirit. Yeah, honestly. So today I'm drinking hot water with honey and lemon. So no alcohol for me today. I should have put some rum in there to help with the with the sickness, but I did not.
What do you call that? Like a hot totty or something? What's it called? Huh? Isn't it like a hot totty or something like that?
What, does it have a name?
Yeah, like it's when you mix something and it's rum or is it brandy? I don't know.
Oh, sounds fun. Before we get started with the documentary, I wanted to say something. So last week, right, Forens was saying how, like, she finds James McAvoy, what's his name?
Yeah, McAvoy, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I was like, yeah, same, but then I was thinking of a different person. So, like, I was like, okay, I need to figure out who this person is because I can see his face in my head.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he's been in and I don't know his name.
Yeah.
So I went on the internet, Beyonce's internet, and I typed in white male actor and I scrolled through Google Images until I found him. But I found him. It's Tom Hardy.
Oh, how can you forget Tom Hardy's name?
Yeah, I didn't know what his name was. I can see his face.
So, like, with his thick lips.
Yeah, and that's why I knew it wasn't that James guy, because when I don't know, I had the image I had of him, he was wearing like a baseball cap and I could, like, kind of see him from the side. That was like the image imprinted in my mind. And I was like, who is this man? Who is this man? But yeah, it's Tom Hardy. I think he's a very beautiful
Haven't
man.
Haven't you watched Venom?
Yeah. No, I don't think I watched Venom. I think I saw the trailer or something. I'm sure he's been in many a thing, but I can't remember not a single one. Yeah, I can. Oh, is he the one? Is he in Peaky Blinders? Is that a different guy?
He's in some sort of old-timey movie. I can't remember what it is.
But yes, I just thought, you know, because those of you who listened last week, maybe you were really, like, you know, maybe you lost sleep or maybe you couldn't, you know, continue your day, like, not knowing who it was. And so I worked really hard to figure it out. And so, yeah, that's who it was, Tom Hardy.
We got there in the end.
Sure did. But yeah, today we are... doing, as we said, it's spooky season, and we are covering a few episodes from Unsolved Mysteries, which is on Netflix. Apparently it's a reboot of like an old show. Like, there was a show that used to be called Unsolved Mysteries and they used to do the same thing, and Netflix just rebooted it and did these episodes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, cute vibes. But yeah, so the first episode that we're covering, which is what we're doing today, is Mystery on the Rooftop. So, yeah, what were your thoughts on the episode?
I've watched it. Well, not watched. I've heard this documentary many ways. Mm-hmm. Well, not the documentary. Well, let's say the case. I've heard it many ways.
Yeah, what do you think of the documentary?
Yeah, so I think it was interesting because there's a bit, and when we get there, I'll say it. But there's a bit I could never visualize because I've always listened to it on podcasts.
Right.
So it was very helpful in visualizing it. But, like, I'm not a big fan of unsolved mysteries. Like, they really make me lose sleep.
Yeah.
I don't like them. I don't even like listening to, like, podcast episodes where there's not a conclusion. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's
but
why it's spooky season.
All in all, huh?
That's why it's spooky season,
I guess. But all in all, it was good because I think sometimes, because I listen to a lot of crime podcasts, I don't really, like, watch the things. It reminds you that, like, these cases you listen to are actually people. Like, sometimes it's really easy to forget that it's just, like, it's not, like, it's easy to forget that they're human beings and you're so fixated on the interest in, like, the case and the crime.
Yeah.
You forget that
somebody,
these are people.
Someone. Yeah.
Yeah, and in this documentary, you could really feel that this was somebody, someone. So
yeah. I also liked it because I think, and I reckon this is because it's episodes of, like, a series as opposed to, like, just a series on this one case. Like, It was well paced, and they just kind of got on with it, and it was like over in an hour, and they did what they needed to do. Like, there was no point that I was like, okay, you're wasting my time. Like, we normally feel with Netflix documentaries sometimes. It was very like the beginning, the middle, the end. But yes, I enjoyed it. I would definitely
Netflix, please take notes. Do all your documentaries like that, because
it was good. I enjoyed it. But yeah, so the documentary opens up with this lady called Alison Rivera, and she's describing her husband, Ray Rivera, who's 6'5", broad shoulders. He's a water polo player. He was, anyway. And we see, like, loads of family members sharing positive memories of him. So at this point, if you didn't know already, you know that something bad has happened to him, right? Important to note that Ray really wants to be a screenwriter. He's obsessed with films. But that's not really paying the bills. So he turns to his friend Porter Stansberry, who becomes important later on, to put a pin in Porter, which is such an American name, by the way. Like, who names a child Porter? Like, that's a job role, but okay.
In the net and Tom Scarvo.
Yeah. It's very American. Their kids have very Americanized, like...
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So Porter is his mate from high school, and they stayed good friends up until adulthood. Porter works in finance, and Ray ends up working for him, writing like financial articles, even though he doesn't really have experience. So Alison and Ray basically move to Baltimore so that he can work for Porter. And they're like, okay, cool, do you know what? We're going to stay here for 2 years, see how it goes, blah, blah, blah. So they move, it's all good. And then it's like a few months to the 2 years that they were going to leave, because they were going to leave December 2006. And all of this happens in May 2006. So this is where the documentary starts to get a bit weird, and you're kind of like, okay, cool, what is the unsolved mystery? So Alison, Ray's wife, goes on a business trip. She gets to her hotel, she calls Ray, and he...
Sorry, before she goes on the business trip, she wakes up that morning and she says, I love you so much.
Mm-hmm.
First thing in the morning, yeah. Which is fine, that's what couples do.
Yeah.
And then he was like, thank you for loving me so much. And I was like, this nigga, really?
Yeah, but maybe he also said, like, I love you too. Thanks for loving me so much.
You don't forget the last word someone ever said to you. He probably did say that shit, guilty as fuck. And that is wild.
But then maybe...
Maybe she killed him out of anger because of that.
No,
because...
stop that. No, I think... I don't know. I just don't think it's, like, that bad of a thing. Maybe he's, like, had... I don't know. I don't think him saying, thank you for loving me, like, is saying, I don't love you back. I just don't think those two are the same thing. No,
I
know it's
not. But if I tell you I love you, tell me you love me back. Don't tell me thank you for loving me. Like, we've already acknowledged I love you. You love me back.
Okay. So, Alison goes on the business trip after not being told that her husband loves her back. She gets to her hotel and she calls Ray. He doesn't answer. And she's like, okay, a bit weird. Which, I mean, they know their relationship. When the love of my life doesn't answer my phone calls, I'm not like, strange. I'm like, excuse me, what are you doing that you have not answered?
Yeah, that's me.
Could you possibly be doing? You know? But anyway, so it just so happens that at the time she's gone for the business trip, one of her friends is staying at their house. So Alison kind of calls the friend and is like, hey, like, you know, well gone. Where's Ray? And the friend is like, oh, Ray took a phone call at 6:30 and then he just ran out of the house in a hurry and he's not back yet. And then the next morning, Ray's still not home. So Alison's like, yeah, this is weird. And it is weird. She comes back home and she calls everyone, family and stuff. Has anyone heard from Ray? Have you seen him? Blah, blah, blah. No one's heard from him. And her family and his family all gather to kind of like come together and find Ray. And Porter, the friend, Stansbury, puts up this $1,000 reward for information on Ray. Which is like, okay. I mean, cool. Like, you know, I mean, your friend's gone missing.
Do that for a friend. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. So they're scouring the streets, nothing. And all of this just, I just think to myself, like, if your friend goes missing, like, how do you even begin to, like, what, do you just walk around and just hope that, do you know what I mean? Like, how do you even begin to,
because missing is so weird.
Early 2000s. Like, this is not like, literally. Oh, share my location, like, live location.
Yeah, missing is so weird because it's like, where the fuck are you?
Yeah, like, where are you? You're somewhere.
Yeah, where could you have gone? Like, I know all the places you go to, so where is this random place that you are that I don't know? But the footage, there was home footage, a lot of home footage in this, and there was footage of them literally on the table. They looked like the way you'd expect police officers to be when they were on a case. Like, they had all the papers and they were calling, and it was just heartbreaking, to be honest. And you could just see how much people loved him because they dropped everything and flew there to look for him.
Yep. And that's, I think, ties into that point you were making earlier, where, like, he was somebody, something. Like, he literally was so many things to so many people.
Yeah.
He wasn't just a body they found. Oops, spoiler alert. But, yeah, so the news starts to get involved. And he's been gone for 6 days now, which is absolute agony. Imagine 6 days, you just don't know where he is. Like, you just go to bed and wake up and, like, you just have no idea. Like,
you still don't know.
I can't even imagine. But, yeah, after 6 days, they find his car. And she goes to kind of where they've... And the way they find the car, actually, is really wild. Like, it's Allison's parents are kind of driving around. And then her mum's like, oh, that's the car. And the dad's like, no, come on.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the car. And her mum's like, that is the car. And it's the car. Yeah, in just this car park. And Allison's kind of there and she's just looking around like, where are you? Where are you? Like, why were you here? Why were you here? Why would you be here? Trying to like kind of get into his mind and be like, okay, cool, let me try and find you. It's like, you know, when you lose something, you're like, if I was this person, where would I be?
Where would I be? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's 2 days after the car was found and somehow people discover a hole in the roof of a nearby hotel called the Belvedere. It used to be a hotel, but now it's like flats or something. So the guys who find this hole call the police, right? And one of the talking heads kind of says what I am thinking. And it's kind of like, it's such a small hole. Like, how did they even notice it? And it's like high up on the roof. Like, how did you even notice it?
Mm.
Anyway, the police come. They get the building manager to open the door of the room, like where the, like corresponding to where
it's
the hole
random.
Was.
It's a bit random. Like, you see a hole in the roof and you call the police.
Yeah. I would just think water damage. People.
Yeah,
yeah, well, this whole thing is so strange.
We need to know who made that call because that could be the killer.
Right. So they open the door of the room, the hole was in, and he says,
I opened the door up, and the first thing I did, I smelled the stench. The smell was a dead body, and you could see the wall where the blood had came down, and his legs were towards the door. I looked up, and I saw outside.
So he basically tells us that the roof was metal. So it's like he must have come through the metal and then also like the ceiling. It's like a human projectile, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm,
which is really sad to think about. Yeah.
But I think it'll be important at this point to describe, because this is the problem I had with this case. I couldn't visualize what they were talking about until I like watched the documentary and I was like, oh, that's what they were fucking talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So like, just for context, this building is like an old timey building, right? Mm-hmm. And so it has like a mini roof almost, I'd call it. So it's like a little roof and then there's like the major big roof.
Yeah.
And the little roof kind of juts out. So this is where the hole was. And then the big roof is like maybe 2 or 3 floors above. And it's just a normal roof like that you see in American like TV shows where like stablers like running after the killer or whatever. Cool. So he, like, there's a hole in the top of that little roof, which is really like, how did anyone fucking see that? Because,
and it's far out as well. It's far out. Like, it's so directly underneath the big roof. Whereas exactly. Like, if you fell, you would drop. It's like you'd have to like leap out a few meters or so and then go down. Like, that's even, where
and then
is.
There's like this parking space, like parking lot, like opposite it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the multi-story still, car park kind of thing.
Yeah. And it still doesn't even make sense for you to fall via that because the drop wouldn't be enough for you to... So
yeah,
everything just doesn't make sense. And then
it's very strange. And also the hole is like... It's when we say it's small. Like one of the guys, one of the detective guys was like, it was a squeeze for him. Mm. It'd be a squeeze for him to try and like kind of get in. So it's not as if like, you know, someone cut a hole in and dropped him in. He literally must have just, as in the force of his body hitting the roof, caused that hole. So like literally the hole is just big enough for his flying body to go through it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But the building manager says that sometimes when he opens a door, like he'll still see Ray's body there. And I really hope that he was able to have therapy or something after this because he was just minding his business, doing his job, and like now he's scarred for life. So we see Angel, who's Ray's brother, his older brother, and Allison telling us how the police told them that the body they found was Ray's. And it's really, really sad. Like, they're describing the day, like, and she's kind of saying, you know, he gave her some water to drink and then he told her and she's just shaking, like the water's going everywhere and they're all crying. And it's like, the thought of like the love of my life or my sister, like dying, is too much. Like I will start crying and they're both very much alive. So I can't even imagine, like, your world is just, and in this documentary opens up with like their wedding video and like how in love they are and like, they're just.
You can tell she's still very much in love with him.
Yeah, they were only 32. Well, he was only 32 at the time. It's mm-hmm. just like, you were literally about to have your life together. You were like, yep, cool, this is me living our best life. And then he's just ripped from you in such a weird way. Like, I don't know.
It's and just it's so weird. Life could have gone so differently. Like, they could have done the normal stuff and they would have been nobodies. Like, they could have got stayed married, had kids, and we never would have known about Ray or Allison. Yeah. Like, it's just, life is so
they could have, they could have not moved to Baltimore, and like, maybe none of this would ever have happened. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's so crazy. So now we are with Michael Byer, who's the detective at Baltimore Police Department. He tells us how Ray's body was found 8 days after he went missing, and the composition was really, really bad. And he says this is bad because it means that a lot of evidence that they may have been able to get would have been destroyed. And he says that the autopsy was brutal.
Multiple ribs fractured, punctured lungs, lacerations 7-9 inches, damage to his skull. The right leg had two different breaks in it, to the point where the bone was actually protruding through the flesh. With the extent of the injuries, it seemed like the man came from such great heights when he went through that hole.
He says all of that to basically say that Ray must have been pretty high up to have gone through the hole. And like we said before, the hole wasn't really that large and it was kind of clean. Mm. Not clean as in like clean, but clean as in like whoosh. Like it's not as if there was jagged and someone had cut through it. It was like, I kind of think of it like it's like a bullet like going through something. Like yeah, it's just 100%. Like, yeah. It wasn't like the roof caved in. It's like this. And so you just think like, how? That's the whole point of this documentary. It's like, where did he come from? How did he get through that hole? Right. So we get into the theories. Number one is that he jumped off or fell off or was pushed off the very top roof. So this is what Forens was saying before. So you have like the big building, the top roof, and then you can like, if you stand on the top roof, you can oversee the smaller roof, right? But of course, this is disproven, as we said, because of mathematics, right? Quick maths, like where the hole was, like, it's almost like even if he'd done a running jump to kind of project outwards before he went down, like there's no way that he would have landed in that spot. Like it was too far out, right? So we couldn't do that. And also Allison is like, mate, this guy was scared of heights. Like why would he like voluntarily go onto this roof?
Like even if he was gonna kill himself or take his own life, that like, he wouldn't have done it that way.
Yeah, that way, exactly, because he was so scared of heights. Yeah. So theory number two is that he jumped, fell off, was pushed off the parking lot. Again, doesn't make sense because of where the hole was and where the parking lot was and all that stuff. And then the third theory is he fell off or was pushed off or jumped off, whatever, the 11th floor ledge. So this one kind of makes sense with where the hole is, but then it doesn't make sense because of how to get onto the ledge. Like,
he wouldn't have had
access to the ledge. Of course, the cameras aren't working, but he wouldn't have had access to the ledge because you would have had to go through someone's like room or office or whatever. Mm-hmm. And nobody said they saw him and nothing like that happened. And it just seems very like, also there was no CCTV footage of him in the hotel that night. So it's like, how did he then get to the top of the thing?
But nobody's seen him. And he's like a tall, big guy. You would have noticed him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, another point they make is that, again, it's not easy to get to the roof. Like, it's not hard. It's not easy to get to the roof, like we said. And we saw a similar thing with the Elisa Lam case that we did an episode on before. Like, how did you get there? Do you know what I mean? Like, very strange. So, yeah, there's also no CCTV footage, like we said, of him. And also on the roof, it's not working, which is like...
It was disconnected.
Right.
And that's key. It wasn't not working. It was disconnected that day.
Right. So the police deem this a suicide. They say that he died by suicide and no one believes it, as in terms of the family.
Can I just say as well, by the hole where his body went through, they found unscratched glasses and
his phone.
And his phone was like, his phone was perfect, in perfect condition. Yeah. Like she actually shows us the phone. No cracks,
she still
nothing.
Has it, yeah. And even his flip-flops were kind of just like there.
His flip-flops just had like one of the like thonged bits that goes in had like come off.
Yeah, and that was even there. They were there like on the floor, like placed.
Yeah. And that's even another reason why he couldn't have run because he was literally wearing flip-flops. Like it's, you wouldn't be able to run at the speed you need to in flip-flops. So and again, it doesn't make any sense.
Ledge.
It doesn't make any sense because like if he was literally... like if he fell from that height, you would have literally noticed like his phone and his whatever would be cracked.
And yeah, why the damage that there was to his body, right? If he had his glasses on or on him and his phone on or on him, then they too would have perished. Like, I know Nokias were doing bits back then, yeah, but they then would
even
have...
Even at that, his flip-flops, if he fell, his flip-flops should be with him, like, in the hole at the very least, yeah.
Or, like, askew, not placed, do you know what I mean? So it seemed very staged. So it's like, did someone put them there or to kind of make it seem as though he jumped? But then it's just so weird, very weird.
Yeah.
So Alison meets up with the medical examiner, who's kind of like, yeah, like, I know what the police are trying to do, but I'm not going to close the case because I'm going to deem this death as undetermined because lots of these injuries that he had weren't consistent with the fall that he had. So what they're kind of trying to say is some of these injuries were sustained before this fall happened, which means that there's foul play involved, which is what the family believe.
Yeah, and his money clip is missing.
Right. I mean, I don't think anyone was trying to rob him, really.
I don't think it was robbing, but it's just, I think whoever staged that scene forgot that piece because he would have had it on him, so they probably...
What's the money clip?
What is it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you've definitely seen it before, like on TV or something. It's like those old timey, like, well, old time people used to have it, like, you know, when you have like a wad of cash, it just holds it together.
Then they have wallets.
I guess it's a fancy thing, like rich guys used to have it, like, strange. In the 90s and 80s. Yeah,
very strange. So next we get into this like note that Alison finds, and it, I mean, it's weird, right? She finds it, he left it on the day that he disappeared. It has a list of people that he knows, like first names, surnames. It has movie stars, dead and alive. It has films that he likes. It's really random. And like, what's also random is that it's really small and like folded up bare and like stuck to the back of the desk, almost like hidden, kind of like, I don't know. The way it was concealed is kind of like, what is on here? It's not really that deep. But Alison knows that he wrote this note on the day he disappeared because there were scraps in the bin. And the note, as we mentioned, is weird.
Brothers and sisters, right now, around the world, volcanoes are erupting. What an awesome sight. Whom virtue unites, death will not separate.
So it's very strange, right? And Alison is like, the things on it, like, individually weren't strange. Like, she knew he liked these movies. She knew he knew these people. She just couldn't work out why he had compiled this list in the first place and why he had done so in this way. So again, strange. So Alison's kind of like, okay, this is a weird phrase. That whole whom virtue unites, death will not separate, whatever. She's like, let me just Google this shit and see what comes up. What comes up? Freemasons. So it's all a bit like, ooh, okay, what's going on here kind of thing. Like, are the Masons involved? But then she thinks, like, he was a screenwriter, maybe. And he was really kind of, like, I don't know if obsessed is the right word, but very, like, intrigued by that whole thing. Like, maybe he wanted to write a screenplay on it. And so he was doing research because he used to write a lot in this notebook, just random things, random thoughts, and nothing ever really made sense. So maybe it was just kind of like that. And the FBI kind of agree in that, yeah, the note is weird, but it's not a suicide note. So it's almost like they too don't really believe that he died by suicide because it's kind of like, if he did, this isn't a note to prove it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we have this talking head called Jane. I think she was like a journalist or something. She did a story about him at the time. And she's talking about how everything seemed to happen in a hurry with that night that Ray disappeared.
Yeah, he left the house in a hurry. He seemed to park in a hurry. He didn't have much with him. Just seemed that whatever sent him to the Belvedere Hotel building seemed to happen in a hurry.
So remember, Alison's friend was staying at their house at that time. So she was actually there when Ray left. And she heard the phone ring, heard him like answer the phone, run down the stairs straight away, and then like just out of the house. Seemed like a really quick convo. Maybe he said something like, oh, or like some kind of like surprise, something to suggest that he was surprised. And then he leaves. Straight away. Strange. And Alison's kind of like, who rushes out to go and like take their own life? Like, no one just runs out like, oh, seems like it's
in
time.
In flip-flops.
Yeah, exactly. In flip-flops. Oh, seems like it's a great time. Like, not taking anything. So the next step is to kind of think like, okay, so what was this phone call? Where did it come from? Who called them? What's going on kind of thing? Mm-hmm. The police trace the call and find out it came from none other than Stansbury and Associates. Now, does Stansbury seem familiar? Yes, it fucking should, because his friend Porter Stansbury that he moved to Baltimore for, that's his company, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, they can't trace the call to who made the call within the building because they made it from the switchboard or something. So all they know is someone in there made a phone call and they don't know who it is. So I was kind of thinking at this time, like, do you know what? It could be coincidence. Maybe he just got a call from work. Maybe he fucked up or had to rectify something. And he was like, oh, shit, like, let me get to work and do what I need to do. Mm. Which I don't think is an absurd thing to think. But then the moment that they find Ray's body, people start asking about the call, because obviously this is the last thing that we know of before he goes missing. And the company puts a gag order on all the employees within hours of his body being found, according to the documentary. When I did my Googles, they deny this, but I think it's true, right?
Yeah, I think
it's
true.
This is very, very sus. Like, any normal company would say, comply, tell them what you know. This is one of our employees. Like, this is weird. Like, what's going on?
Wait, so the company's saying it's not true that they put the gag order?
Yeah, apparently, like, Porter, I don't know if Porter himself, but the company was kind of like, yeah, look, that's not true. They didn't put a gag order.
But the thing is that then they should, if they didn't put a gag order, by now we should know who made that call, because that's very traceable information if you allow your employees to talk. So they obviously did.
Right. Very strange. Very, very strange behavior. And you're just like, mate, this is your mate. This is actually your mate. Like,
do you know what I love about this documentary? They didn't say, oh, like, Porter's guilty as fuck, but they had his face out and about there.
Oh, my God.
So, like, you very much know who this guy is.
So many pictures of him, like, literally from teen to now. Like,
to now. Literally. Like, we know who you are.
So this guy cannot hide. Yeah, it's like, and I think the thing I like about this series is that it really is for the purposes of let's try and reopen these cases and, like, get more information about it. Like, if you know anything, like, we're applying pressure. This happened, like, 15 years ago. So someone or someone's have been quiet for 15 years. Like, surely something is eating you up inside. Yes, surely you just need one person to say the right thing and, like, we're home free. Allison and his family can rest, because this is very ridiculous. Very, very ridiculous. So his friend, Porter, he's not talking to detectives. He doesn't even return their calls. And I'm like, this is very suspect behavior, because it's like, you're here offering 1K reward to find him. Yeah. Like, first of all, 1K is more money considering how much money you supposedly have. But anyway, that's not my problem. It's like, would you not want to cooperate to try and find that? You're not even, you're airing them. You're not speaking to them.
Yeah.
Like, and this is your mate. They've known each other since they were 15. That's like me and you.
That's true.
That's a very, and they were older at that time. They were like 32 or in their 30s.
Yeah, so it's been a long-standing friendship. It's been a long,
literally. And you're not, you know, we even see pictures of them together young. Like, so you don't feel obliged to be like, yeah, cool, let me try and help. Or even just to say, like, look, I don't know anything. I've spoken to employees. This is what I found out. Nothing. You're just airing the detectives.
Ray Charles.
Is that not strange behaviour? Very strange behaviour. So Allison is also like, yeah, this is weird, because we literally moved out here so that he could work for you and you're not even trying to help the police. This is weird. Like, why is that? So she's starting to have her suspicions as well. So we get on-screen text, which tells us that Porter declined requests to be interviewed for the documentary. And I thought that was really interesting, because it's not like the usual ones where they're like, oh, did not respond to our requests. It's like he actively declined them. It's like he spoke to them and was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing it. Whereas normally when they do these things, people are like, yeah, they just aired us. They didn't respond. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you literally responded to say no. Like, is that not strange? Like, this is your mate. Like, do you not want to know? I mean, he doesn't want to know because he knows.
Yeah, allegedly. He knows. No, I'm not even saying allegedly. That nigga guilty as fuck.
I feel like he definitely knows. So we get into a little bit about Porter's company. I didn't really do too much on this because finance confuses me. But essentially, they are fined over $1 million for giving fraudulent stock tips. But they're kind of like, they're not fraudulent. Like, we're entitled to kind of say what we think is going to happen. Mm. And Ray was kind of brought in to kind of clean up their image and write his financial articles. It's called, like, the Rebound Report. So kind of like stocks that are low or not doing well that he thinks are going to, like, sort of like have a comeback, encouraging people to invest in those stocks so that when they do have that comeback or rebound or whatever, they make a lot of money. And, you know, this doesn't always work in the best way and people lose money or whatever. So that's just a thing, a little tidbit, which maybe I think they kind of sprinkle in there to kind of insinuate a motive for why someone might want to hurt Ray.
Kill Ray. Yeah.
So Allison tells us that 2 weeks before Ray died, he seemed to be really worried about something. She didn't think much of it, but she was like, yeah, okay, this guy seems to be worried.
This is why men need to fucking communicate. I can't emphasize this enough.
Yeah.
There's so much in this documentary that reminds me of, like, my partner. Like, just fucking communicate.
Just say how you feel, yeah.
Literally, because...
But in this situation, it could be a thing where if he uncovered or stumbled upon something really, really deep, maybe he's not trying to also, like, have her in danger from her knowing...
Just because even, okay, if you're not trying to have her in the mix of it, if she knows, she knows to have her guard up, like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or to like be more like careful when she's out or like about the house.
Yeah.
So yeah. Then the Monday before he went missing, the house alarm goes off at like 1 a.m. He's never done that before. But like Allison tells us that Ray looks really, really scared. And like he comes downstairs with like a bat and she was like, "This guy is never scared. I've never seen fear like this in his eyes before. Like, what is he afraid of?" Police come, they say it's a squirrel. But it's like, mate, is this the first squirrel to come to your yard? Like that 1 a.m. the alarm's doing ring ring. Very strange. So yeah. Happens again the next Tuesday at 1 a.m. And they say one of the windows has been tampered with. If it was kind of like someone's trying to get into the house. And we're actually back at the house. Allison's kind of showing us the window where it happened and stuff like that. So it's crazy because that Tuesday, 1 a.m. is when the alarm went off again. And that evening is when he left and rushed out the house and never came back. So Allison's kind of convinced that like this had something to do with his death. Like whoever was trying to come in or intimidate them. Like maybe that has something to do with him. Dying. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's inconceivable to think that.
No, I don't think it's far-fetched. Mm-hmm. I also think I know what happened.
Oh, we'll get into that in the end. So Allison and Angel think that Ray was killed. I agree. 3 weeks into the investigation, the main guy, Michael Byer, he gets pulled off the case. He kind of says to Wasser, "Look, I'm the only one on my floor that thought that this was murder and not suicide." And then he gets pulled off the case. They put him on like traffic duty or whatever. You know, in Brooklyn Nine-Nine when like, when he was behaving, they put him on. Yeah, so they do that. And it's kind of like, this thing goes all the way to the top. Trump.
All the way to the top. Trump.
Literally. Yes. So Allison finds out that, you know, they've taken Michael Byer off the case and she calls the police and is like, "Hey, like, you know, what's going on with the case?" And they say to her, and I quote, "You need to get it through your head that your husband committed suicide." And I'm like, now I have to throw my phone and I have to send you guys anthrax. Like, I'm just like, do you know that this is a person?
Literally.
This is not just a body that you found. This is a human being with family.
With a family.
And it's like, you, if you really look at it, this doesn't make sense for this to be a suicide. Like, you just want to close the case nice and easy and be like, all right, off you go, on your bike. Like, yeah, no, this does not make sense. She's not in denial. Like, she has legitimate doubts about what happened to her loved one. I cannot believe they said that. I can believe it. So our detective, Michael Byer, says, like, this case is only going to get solved if someone that, like, Ray works with comes forward. Someone needs to spill the tea. I agree. I don't know what that gag order, how strong that thing was that in 15 years, no one has said anything or no one has said anything to someone else who's like come back and said, oh yeah, this is, somebody told me this. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, so strange. So the documentary is coming to a close now and his brother, Angel, is telling us how much grief the family is still in. Like, he says things like, you know, life has moved on, of course, and like, good things have happened, like him and his sister both had children and like, you know, as happy as they are about certain things, right behind that is like, oh, Ray should be here or should have been Uncle Ray. And I think that's probably how grief works. It's like it doesn't ever really go away. It's just kind of like you having to live with it and deal with it every single day, which is just so horrible. And then it's like that added element of not really truly knowing what happened.
Yeah.
And then the added element of people telling you that like, yeah, your brother, your husband, your son, whatever, died by suicide. It's like, yeah, but
and
he didn't.
You know that's not true.
Exactly. And someone, the person who in charge or who caused his death is just out here chilling 15 years later, doing all Stansbury research, changing your company name and shit. But, yeah, I just feel so bad for Allison.
And the family.
And the family, yeah, exactly. And the way that these episodes end, it's always kind of like, contact this place if you have any more information. And I really hope that somebody does. Because it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
I did a deep Goog after, because obviously, what else?
Yeah, so I tried to.
You tried to? You didn't find anything?
Nothing that was, it was just all the same article saying the same thing, just recapping the documentary. And I was like, meh.
Okay. So, first of all, I wanted to find out if Allison had, like, moved on. Because part of me hoped that she had, like, found love and had kids and whatever. She hasn't. She's like moved back to California, which is where they were meant to go back to. But she never, it doesn't seem like she ever married or anything.
I don't blame her, you know.
Yeah, I think Ray was really the love of her life. And it still seems like she's very close to his family. So,
and also, I feel like there is no closure. Like, as much as I say I don't believe in closure, yeah, that's just in terms of like relationships. That, like, oh, we broke up, or he did this, you guys, what? In this situation, it's like the love of your life is dead, and you don't know why.
Yeah. So how can you even move on?
Right. It's just, yeah. So I kind of understand why that would be. But yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, so she, like, so it says she, someone tried to pick up Ray's computers. Like, they kept calling to pick it up before, like, so when it had been taken in for, like...
forensics.
Yeah, it had. So which leads me to believe they did not look into his computer well enough, or there was something in code that they overlooked, because I think that note was written in code. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's whatever. I think it was written in code and someone just hasn't cracked the code. Right. So it makes me think that they didn't look at the computers well enough, because apparently someone that she kept calling, asking, like, can the computers be picked up? Can they be picked up? And, like, Alison wanted them to investigate that more and they didn't. So that I have some so theories weird. As well that I found. One was about him being hit by a car from the... from the car park and then falling through the roof. But that didn't make sense because...
How fast would the car be going in a car park?
For yeah, him also, and then that's him, like... one. Part of the car would have been hanging off the roof and somebody would have noticed that. And two, also, like, the way he fell through that roof was very pointed, so if you get hit by a car it would be a bigger hole.
I think he was dropped from a helicopter.
That's what I was gonna say. So the second theory was that he was, because he was really into movies, there's this thing called David Fincher's The Game. So it's a game.
Oh, yeah,
it's a
movie called,
yeah, I'm actually gonna watch that movie because it looks really good and it's pretty similar. And then the guy ends up, like, jumping off a roof, but then he doesn't die, but it's the same thing. So people are like, oh, maybe he was trying to reenact that because he's into movies.
But then just, like, risking out of your house to reenact a movie.
Fam, for me, I think he uncovered something that he shouldn't have, or, like, maybe he was, maybe, like, this might be a long shot, but sometimes the most ridiculous thought is the real thing.
Yeah, like, life is changing
the fiction. I think this Porter might be, like, a Freemason or something. I don't know. Some cult. And maybe Ray, like, uncovered all of this stuff. And he was called that day by the business. And he went into a helicopter. Because where this place is that he was found, the Belvedere, is that what it's called? It's not actually far from Porter's office. So it's plausible that he would have gone to his office... rather than going to... I don't know whether they checked the CCTV to see if he went to his office that day, but that seems very likely. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that he would have gone to his office, they got into a helicopter, and I don't even know if he was meant to be killed or if he fell or something, but I definitely think he fell, because the reason that theory was written off was that people said that, well, we didn't hear anything. They were asked about this, like, did you hear blah, blah, blah. And everybody was like, no. But then when I was reading up, one of the detectives was like, the altitude at which the helicopter would have been flying for him to fall and hit, like, he literally was almost like a missile that hit that thing. Yeah. It would have been very high. So you may not have heard it. But then
when I saw that, it was like, so they said the same thing in that, like, for them to have heard the helicopter, it would have had to be quite low, right?
Yeah.
But then also for him to have, like, falling in that building, he would have had to been quite low. Like, if it was higher, he could have gone anywhere. I mean, and anywhere does include also the building. And like, maybe it was just they didn't plan it to be there. Maybe it was just just chance that he hit that building. But if he had fallen from a higher altitude, he could have literally been anywhere. And so if someone was trying to, like, kill him and, like, hide it, then, like, why would they take the chance not knowing where? And then
I don't think it was intentionally meant to be
killed. How would his glasses and thingies end up, like, even if they also fell with him, how would they have been undamaged?
I don't think he was intentionally meant to be killed, and I think that's why the glasses and everything was placed there, and I think that's why the money clip wasn't there, because if somebody was really trying to kill him, they would have gotten rid of all the evidence, like, and made it not even, and his body wouldn't have even been there. I think it was an accident. I think he was in a helicopter and he fell by accident. And then Porter, in a rush, just left all of those things. And I just think he got away with murder. And he has enough money. And because Porter's worth, like, over 100 million. I think it's either 240 million or 140 million. But he's worth a lot of money. And he was, back then, he definitely was one of those preppy white boys that came from a rich family.
Yeah.
So
in all the pictures of all of their friendships, like, Ray is the only person of colour in all the pictures.
It was literally.
Rich, preppy, white-looking guys, yeah.
Literally, like, he gives me Andy Bernard vibes from The Office. God.
Yes, yes.
Literally same vibes.
But a lot more calculated.
I just don't... I think he did it. It was an accident, but I don't think... I don't think he meant to do it. I don't think he was like, oh, I'm going to kill him. I think he did. I think Ray was getting too close to something. He did it. And I think they just went into the helicopter to have a conversation away from, like, maybe Porter prying thinks eyes. That his office is bugged or prying eyes, whatever. And I think Ray fell and that's how it happened. I don't think...
I think the helicopter is the only thing that makes sense just because of the way that he... through the roof, like, nothing else makes sense. Like, I'm sorry, like, even if he had jumped from the roof, I don't know that he would have, like, maybe he would have landed and broken some bones or something, but I don't know. He went through the roof, guys. Like, when you watch this documentary, literally there's a hole in the roof.
Mm-hmm. And also the whole thing about people didn't hear or see a helicopter, first of all, if you're in a building, you might not hear it. That's one, because I don't live a crazy, like, distance away from, like, the airport and stuff like that. And, like, if you ask me today, oh, did I hear or see a plane fly over? I cannot conclusively tell you whether I did or I didn't.
But helicopters are different. Like, I remember hearing, I was in this house, like, and I heard helicopters. I was like, wait, is that helicopters?
No, it's hella loud. But what I'm saying is, it could, maybe it wasn't close enough for people to whatever. And even, like, somebody could have been in passing, maybe heard it, but it's not even something they recall because...
You register, yeah.
Exactly. So... I think it was a helicopter, and I don't think Porter meant to kill him. I think he fell by accident, and then Porter probably just got someone to go up to the roof. And it probably is somebody who you wouldn't even notice. He could have even paid a bellboy or something. Just go to the roof, drop these things. I don't know. I just feel
like somebody. But then also, if it was an accident and he fell from however high, yeah, how is Porter going to know exactly where he fell to?
Which is why I think he put that reward out, because he didn't think they would find the body. Because if you fall from... You could fall anywhere. Do you understand what I mean?
You could fall anywhere, which means anywhere. You literally could have fallen onto the street. And somebody...
Yeah, so I'm saying it's just... Him falling through that roof is coincidence. It wasn't meant to happen. So what I'm trying to say is, I think he put that money up because obviously he maybe thought, oh shit, this man fell through the roof.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, at the time that he fell, yeah, say he fell from such a high altitude, Porter doesn't know whether he fell on the roof, on the street, on a bus. He doesn't know. So how then does he know to put the glasses and the slippers on this roof?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Because think about the altitude you're speaking of, yeah? How does he know where he landed? That's what I mean. See, it just doesn't make any sense. It's unsolved.
I think I solved that shit, but...
Yeah, I just really pray that one day...
And also, I don't know, man. He could have found out. There are ways to find out. He could have found out. I don't know. I don't think that is the least, like, that makes the least sense. He could have found out.
I think
maybe they hovered a bit lower to see, and then they saw the hole. They're like, oh, shit.
Oh, and to be honest, it was the workers that found the hole. But then they called the police, so...
Yeah, one of them could have planted. And also, on top of that, you had many days to find that hole. It was 8 days later they found his body. Mm-hmm. So, in that time, the glasses and stuff could have been planted there.
Yeah. Listen, literally anything could have happened. Could have been aliens for all we know.
I did think aliens for a sec, man.
No, but I feel like I don't know. I feel like aliens are a bit sick of us. I don't know that they would be bothered to... Do you know what I mean? But yes, it's time for our new segment.
The real crime, I think, was the beard.
Where we focus on something during the documentary that may not be criminal, but we definitely consider to be a crime. What is yours for the week, babes?
Crime was probably the phone he had. Even for the time, it was a bit like, whoa. Like, I don't know what make it was. It wasn't a Nokia. It was like...
Yeah, it's probably like a Siemens, you know?
Yeah.
Siemens didn't even make phones these days.
It wasn't making sense. And also, the other crime, sorry to say this, was that he didn't tell his wife that he loves her back. And I feel like she said that as well because it hurt. Because she remembered that.
She didn't seem hurt to me. She seemed kind of like...
To you.
No, I know, but to me, she seemed kind of like, you know, and he said, thanks for loving me. As if like, ugh, he let me love him kind of thing. Like, you should let me love you.
I would remember that. Okay, not Mario. I would remember that, and not in a good way, if that was the last thing my man said
to me. Yeah, I know, but you and Alison...
I would get to heaven and be like, don't try to chat to me.
Don't you also think that Alison had quite a glow up? Like, don't you think she looks really good now compared to...
she looks a lot better than she did.
Yeah, like the short hair, the highlights. I was like, yes, Alison.
She was definitely punching with him. She was
definitely like grieving and stuff. But I was definitely was like, yeah, you go, Glenn Coco. Yeah. And my real crime, it was really quite difficult to find one in this documentary for me. But I had to go with the flip-flops because I just didn't really understand the fashion choice. But, you know, it is what it is.
It was a rush.
He was in a rush. He literally just... It's probably a house slipper. And, you know...
the slipper you put on when your mum asks you to bring in the stuff she bought. To help with the shopping.
Yeah. But, yeah, this one, like, honestly, it bothers me. It bothers me. I think about it often.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that we'll ever know what happened, but... Yeah.
Yeah, right. I can't wait to die, because then I can just know what happened to half these, like, in these stories.
People, yeah. House of Terror is what we're doing next. I really meant to say, oh, what are we doing next? But then the House of Terror came out first, so that's what we're doing next. That's the episode of Unsolved Mysteries we're doing next. Again, I will make a trailer and play it for you at the end. In the meantime, between time, where can they find us?
TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, yeah, Twitter, 2girls1doc. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, 4ends2_ and my other podcast character replay.
I was going to say something. Oh, also, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can send us your thoughts and feelings on the podcast on Instagram. You can DM us, Twitter, you can DM us, you can email us, 2girls1doc@gmail.com, and when we get enough, we'll do your credits, just reading them out. Okay? Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys, I'm going to play the trailer, and yeah, I think that's it for us now today, isn't it? It's bedtime.
Toodles, I'm tired, guys. I'm tired.
I know, we know, we can tell.
All right, bye.
Bye.